And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and with me is Phil Conlon.
Good afternoon.
How you doing, Phil? And Peter Rosenthal is with us, mathematician and prominent lawyer. Good to see you.
Hi, thanks.
We're going to talk today about Charles Roach, who died on October the 2nd. We all knew he was in poor health, and on this program we've spoken to him, of him and with him at some length, because Charles's career spans so many issues, and he was such a central figure, and remains that, actually. There was, for example, on the weekend, the National Coalition of Black Lawyers met in Toronto, and they came here specifically because of Charles Roach. They wanted to bring the venue to Charles. If he couldn't make it to their meeting, they moved it to be here. But also because Charles has made such a contribution, not only in Canada but in international law, so we want to talk about the significance of Charles's work and type of human being he was. By the way, the Globe and Mail had an excellent title on the obituary they wrote, which was a great Canadian in all but an official title. And we're going to be talking to Peter Rosenthal about this official title business. And I'll just tell you that later in the program we're going to talk with, and we'll be joined by Miguel San Vicente, who is the impresario at a different book list, and they are intending to publish the last book of poems by Charles Roach. So we're going to talk about that, and we will have a woman, Julia Farquharson, who was one of the seven mothers, one of the most celebrated fights for equality and respect under the law, particularly for workers. And these were Jamaican women who were being told they had to leave Canada, and the leaders of the struggle were called the Seven Mothers, and so we're going to talk to one of the seven mothers, Julia Farquharson, and that's coming up. And we're also going to be talking with David Jacobs. We were going to start with him today because David was going to set the stage for us. David was at the time of the Seven Mothers case, he was a student, and he recently encountered Julia Farquharson, and she said to him, "Oh, you're the young man who drove me to all the meetings." She said, "You would come to my house and pick me up and take me to all the demonstrations." So I want to get a taste of that. Well, first of all, we're going to talk to Miguel San Vicente. And by the way, I'm inviting Phil and Peter. Please just jump in. You understand it's not no standing on ceremony at this feast. This is Thanksgiving. Miguel, are you there? Miguel? Oh, he's not. We'll hear about it as soon as he is. Peter, could you tell us, we're going to be, one of our first guests will be coming, Julia Farquharson. And so let's just start with the question of how did that case end up? These were seven women who were told they're going to have to leave because they had, my memory was that they had had children in Jamaica but had not told the authorities. So that became the basis to remove them from Canada. They came here to work.
Yeah, my recollection is that they were domestic workers, and a number of domestic workers have come to Canada over the years. And domestic workers were not allowed to bring families, though. And on the forms, they had to fill out a form, did they or did they not have children? And many of them, needing the work, said no when they did. And this was discovered in several cases, and then they were ordered deported. And luckily, Charlie became aware of that situation. And he fought it in the way that Charlie fought all important battles, with legal arguments and on the streets and with letter writing and campaign and all-out assault on the injustice of these women who had worked so hard being thrown out of Canada. And that they won some legal victories and they lost some. It was up and down. But then the combination, the power of the mass movement, I think, was what finally did it. And the minister finally relented and allowed the women to stay.
Yeah, it always takes me to that proverb, the judges read newspapers. what is unthinkable Monday morning becomes very thinkable Wednesday afternoon based on reaction. But, of course, by the way, public figures began to, as they understood what was going on, people began to speak up all over the place.
And Mike Smith was a colleague of Charlie's lawyer at the time, and he reminded me a little while ago on the phone that they went to the Canadian Human Rights Commission, and it was one of the very first cases ever brought before the Canadian Human Rights Commission. And the ministry took the position that the Canadian Human Rights Commission had no jurisdiction over their decisions like this, and it was taken to court, and the ministry lost. So Charlie and Mike won that case, and then sometime shortly after that, the ministry finally caved in.
Yeah. Phil, by the way, you were there.
Yes, I was there. We had a lot of picket lines. We had, of course, one thing that we said at the time, which got a lot of people upset, was we said the immigration ministry was infected with racism. And that was a very explosive charge because, of course, the Globe and Mail and Star said, no, you can't say that, that these are, you know, good civil servants, and it has nothing to do with the fact that these women are black people from the third world and all that sort of stuff. But Charlie's thesis was, no, you are treating them like chattels. You've used them, and now you want to throw them out of the country. And that was it put out there in the public debate that there was racial considerations in how the Immigration Department conducted its business, and they didn't like that.
Yeah, and by the way, this is a program full of surprises. Now we already have Julia Farquharson with us. Are you there, Julia?
Hello, Phil.
Hey, it's good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
You and you can answer all of our questions. But of course, we're celebrating the life and achievements of Charles Roach, and he was your counsel. But you were the one who was in a deep problem. Could you just kind of outline what that case was about in your memory, and also how it ended for when you knew that you were going to win?
Well, my case was particularly. I came here as a visitor and I overstayed my time. And 10 months after I went into immigration, and they told me I wasn't a Canadian citizen and I didn't have Canadian domicile, whatever that meant at the time. Mm-hmm. However, they told me I could appeal, which I did. During the appeal, I had another problem where a friend of mine, she was receiving social assistance and she asked me to cash her checks and send the money to the States, which I did. Not realizing that I shouldn't have done that. However, it wasn't to my benefit because I have all the receipts to prove it, but I was also charged for it. But that wasn't enough to do anything to me in terms of the real terms because I wasn't stealing. It's just that a fact that I shouldn't have signed her checks.
Mm-hmm.
But I did sign her checks and sign my own name too and change it in my bank. So if I was doing something wrong, I wouldn't do that. Anyway,
yeah.
At the time, my appeal process was going through, and they told me they have to wait. They couldn't give me my landed until the case was heard. Mm-hmm. After it was done, they gave me my landed, and then tried to put me on deportation after. I find something was really wrong with that, and I said, no, you can't do this, because this is not right.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you wait until you find out the case was done and then try to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, well, I'm going to fight it now. So I start writing letters, and I get in touch with Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Charlie also had a problem with the Law Society as well for himself, and I think it was Michael Smith at the time.
Yeah.
And he told me he couldn't take the case on at that moment, but what he could do is get, it was Peter Lockyer at the time.
Ah, Peter, yeah.
James Lockyer.
James Lockyer.
Yeah, James Lockyer, sorry.
Yes, he was working in Charles' firm, I guess.
Yes, at right. 5 Selby Street. And he did. And we protested the case. We had a lot of demonstration to immigration. I tell you, Charlie is one hell of a fighter, and he is a man for justice and social equality and social changes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He fought these cases, not just only my case alone, but there was also 7 mothers who were working under the domestic scheme, and they were on deportation as well.
Yeah. I think.
So
by the way,
you weren't one of the seven then, Julia, is that right?
No, I wasn't one of the seven.
Yeah. I see. Okay.
That's my mistake.
That you were.
Yes.
No. I make the eight.
You're
the
number eight.
Seven plus.
Yes.
And you worked a lot with the seven mothers, too, and helped to promote their situation as well, right?
Yes, yes. Because I was like the voice, you know, for the voiceless then. Because I knew something was not right. Mm-hmm. But I just couldn't, you know, articulate it at the moment because I don't know the law and the terms of Canadian law.
Right.
But I know something was wrong. So anyway, I did. So we go through the appeals and everything, and they try and still was fighting hard. Ranatke was the immigration minister at the time. I remember one time we were at 80 University Avenue marching and protesting, and the immigration officer, they didn't even know who I was. They were standing there talking to me, and I remember a lady by the name of Penny King, and she was in the march too, and she went up to them and said, "You're talking about the lady, Julia Farquharson. Do you know who she is?" And she handed him a flyer that we have and just pushed it in his face and said, this is the person you're talking about."
That was I bet he was startled.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he was. Because I guess he was looking for somebody other than who I was really is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the court, and Charlie says to me, I remember we used to have an organization that Charlie formed. It's called Community Against Racism CAR. Mm-hmm. And we usually meet sometimes at U of T down there. And one day when I go there, we discuss the issue around my case. And he said, "You know, Julia, if we have anything we have to do to keep you here, we're going to keep you here. Don't worry about it." At that time, I have three Canadian-born children.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, "Okay, we'll find out how much it would cost. If you don't have to take the kids if you don't want to, because they're Canadian born, they can't deport them." Mm-hmm. So he said, "We'll find out how much it would cost the government to maintain three Canadian born children if I'm not here, considering the fact that if I'm here and have to receive welfare, it would be cheaper than if I leave them and they have to take care of them until you're 18 at least."
Charlie thought of everything.
It would cost a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we protest and do all the kid things that we have to do. And one day, I remember it was a Thursday night, I went to bed too, and I had this dream. And I dreamed that, you know, I got a big brown envelope from the minister, and he said, "You're not going again." And Friday morning, I woke up and I got a call from Charlie's office, and he says, "Julia, can you come down to my office? We need to have a press conference because the minister just said you're not going again." And that was like they ordered the deportation for about 24 hours before I go. They stopped it.
That was a close call.
It was.
By the way, that was a typical Charles reaction. Make sure there's a press conference.
Yes, yes. And I remember, you know, all the reporters were there and everything. And after that, I got my landed back. I had was to wait for a period of time because they're still giving me a runaround. They keep giving me minister's permit. Finally, before I got it, I had was to cross the border. But they didn't tell the American border that was the reason, too, that I was going. So, you know, it's like they were doing something as well wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're sending me across the border and then to come back because I couldn't apply from within Canada. Uh-huh. I would have to leave Canada and then come back. But I wouldn't leave Canada to go to Jamaica. So mm-hmm. they sent me across the border to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramkosin was the one who drove me to Buffalo.
This is good history, Julie. I'm writing this down.
Ramkosin worked for Charlie as an immigration consultant.
Yes, yes.
By the way, well, remind us who Ramkosin is, Peter.
Ramkosin was a paralegal with Charlie.
Right.
I think he has his own office now, he and his son, I think. network.
That's right. You've kept in touch with him and with Charlie, too, over the years.
Oh, yes. I never forget where I come from. That's mm-hmm. one thing about me. If you have done a favor for me or anything that was good for me, I will never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept in touch with Mr. Roach all these years. And Michael Simmet as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dudley Laws was another person.
There's right. another one.
By
the way, do you recall some of those meetings that Charles sang and people in the crowd sang with him?
Oh yes. Several times. He always have songs to sing. I remember one time he said to me, Julia, you know you're a very, very good speaker. You speak so eloquently. You know, you could have run for City Hall.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, maybe you should.
But, you know, Charles, you know, at that age, I was young. I was like 25 plus.
Mm-hmm.
And he was my mentor. Because mm-hmm. all the things that he have taught me and explained to me, I never forget those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I always, you know, hold my head high by saying that, you know, here is someone who's going to walk the soles of his shoes out to protest for somebody else. So at least what I could have done is make sure that what he worked so hard for, I maintain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I tried to do over all those years, even up to now.
Mm-hmm.
I will still fight for those cause.
Yeah. Well, that's Julia. That's a great sentiment. There's going to be some more meetings. It's interesting that we've been going through a period here where people really want to be talking about Charles and all the lessons. And I hope you will be coming out to those meetings and we get you to talk.
Oh, definitely, I will.
You did come, I think, Julia, on July 22nd to the tribute for Charlie, right?
Yes, I was there. Is this Peter?
That's Peter, yeah, hi.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
I didn't.
Sorry.
That's a little surprise for you. That's Peter Rosenthal.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I recognize your voice, you see.
I know, I can't get away from this voice as much as I try to.
Yeah, because you were one of the people, too. You know, I can name all the people that was in the struggle and the fight for our cause. I know everyone.
Yeah,
well, Peter, I think you were going to ask a question.
What did you think of the tribute on July 22 for Charlie?
It was a very moving tribute. It was a wonderful tribute, you know. He deserved all of that because he's one that worked tirelessly for the cause, you know, human rights, social justice, you know, and racism. Because back in the 70s, this is the late 60s, early 70s, you know, the Charter of Rights that we have now, it wasn't there back then.
That's right.
So, you know, people could do anything they pleases with you, and it's like you didn't have rights.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just do what others tell you to do, and no rights. But
yeah, what year was that, Julia? I don't think we've established the year that the case was won for you and the Jamaican mothers.
That was 1979.
Yeah. And as you say, that was the same year that Charlie and his colleague Mike Smith were brought in front of the Law Society.
Yes, right.
On disciplinary charges.
Yeah.
Did you attend any of that?
No. I did not attend any of those.
That was a very public matter, too.
It was.
Is the way Charlie did it. I don't know if we should tell that story.
Get into that. I think Julian remembers that we would all turn out for all these things. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And because, there was that element of it, the public element, like Julia speaking. I can recall seeing you, Julia, at University Avenue. I remember that I said to myself, this is interesting. Here's a woman who's been put upon, but boy, can she talk.
Yeah.
So, I thought, is she a ringer? Maybe an actress. But anyhow, you were great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Julia, it's really great talking to you. We hope we can get you in to come to the studio. We're going to do some more reminiscing about Charles, and we're going to make sure you know about the next meeting. We want you to be up there at the microphone.
Okay. And also, do you know when is the memorial and those kind of stuff that's happening?
Peter may know.
There's no date yet set.
Okay.
Charlie's wife, June, is contemplating that as we speak.
Okay.
But it's expected that they'll wait a few weeks. There's been a lot of activity in recent times. There have been 5 or 6 different tributes for Charlie, and everybody's going to maybe take a breath and then have a big memorial meeting.
Okay. As long as I'm informed and kept abreast of it, because I don't want to miss that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We hope that the news of that will be loud and clear so everybody in Toronto knows about it.
Okay.
We're going to tell all your friends, and they're going to tell you.
Oh, definitely. I'll keep on top of it. I'm checking the news media. Everything.
Okay, Julia. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Julia Farquharson. And I do remember her vividly, and she was great. And, of course, I misremembered her status. She wasn't one of the seven, but she was involved in the same around the same issue. And it was, as we call it here, 7+1. You know, I was thinking with Charles, if we do a life of him, it could be a musical, because Charles sang when he felt like it.
That's
you know how you watch a musical, you say, oh, I like the drama part, but you know, now they're singing. In the case of Charles, that was his life. You never knew when he was going to start to sing.
One time I had him as a guest lecturer in my law class at the Faculty of Law. And he spoke a few sentences and then broke into song to everybody's surprise and gratitude by the end of the song.
Now you tell that story, and I just was speaking to someone the other night who said that he had been invited to the law school at York, and the same thing happened. So yeah. He was irrepressible. But the music being involved, and by the way, Phil Conlon is here, and Phil Conlon has a music program on Tuesdays at 12 o'clock?
12 noon.
So we're going to have to, we're working on you, we're lobbying you to do something, a musical about Charles Roach. But
I'm not going to sing.
The music already, see, he already laid the music in, as they say. You don't have to do that. He already did it. This is the Taylor Report. It's CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. We're speaking of Charles Roach today, and he passed away on October the 2nd. A great figure, and so impact on, you know, I would tell our listeners, impact on your life whether you know it or not. And now we're going to talk with someone who I intended, this is my day of, this is jumbled, but all these people know each other and we're all. I was going to ask David Jacobs to start off today, because David, you're there, I think.
I am here. Hello.
Good to have you. And now you told me the story that you had run into so many of our old friends and whatnot at the gathering for Charles in July, and Julia Farquharson was there, and she immediately told you that you had a role in the campaign to win her status in Canada. Let's start with that. What is your memory of that?
Well, it's a long time ago now, but it all kind of comes back to me listening to Julia on your show, which is truly wonderful. We had a long campaign, and at the time, I wasn't a lawyer. I don't know if I started law school. I might have done it in the middle of the campaign. I started in 79, and I was just a callow sociologist or something at the time. And I worked with and for, as Julia said, the Committee Against Racism in Toronto. I think I had a title as coordinator, but I'm not sure that it went beyond title.
Yeah.
But
she claims you were driving her around. I think that's that's coordination.
Yeah, chauffeur or something like that. But anyway, no, it was my recollection was over a year of very intense work, which included demonstrations, attending at all of the appearances, court or immigration tribunal, human rights tribunal, and so on. I mean, I even have a sort of amusing and brutally cold memory of driving up in a car with Charlie Roach and Dudley Laws and the seven mothers. Now I'm reluctant to say seven mothers, because I'm now recalling there were more than seven, and
yes.
Julia was another one.
Mm-hmm.
And driving up all the way to Ottawa and standing out in the snow on Parliament Hill, about I guess a dozen of us or something, picketing and visiting MPs and trying to push the cause, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I now recall what Julia told you, the absolute majesty of the law in Canada, that when the women were eventually granted their landed status, given minister's permits to stay, rather, they had to go across the border to Buffalo and then come back in order to make it all legally kosher, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And And people make fun of lawyers, and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that strikes me when I was listening to Julia is something I hope I've learned from Charlie, which is that he really respected his clients a lot. He wasn't a lawyer who kind of elbowed his clients out of the way and said, "I'm going to tell your story for you, and you're going to shut up." Mm-hmm. People like Julia. And others of the other mothers, I remember Mrs. Peart and so on, who stayed engaged and involved in their own fights, but they were also spokespeople for themselves. I mean, Charlie would speak at demonstrations. Obviously, he was counsel in court, and he would plead the cases for them. But he never stopped them from speaking. He encouraged it, and Charlie was wonderfully respectful of his clients. He never believed that... you know, the lawyers were the only people who could speak. The lawyers were the only people with any smarts. That it was their case and they had the right to tell it. And frankly, they told it beautifully, as you can hear from Julia Farquharson. They were all wonderful. They were articulate. Their stories were compelling. Mm-hmm. And it was a case of racism. I mean, here is a situation where, again, in my recollection, and again, Peter and Phil might recall more details, but
Phil and Peter.
They had this sort of domestic worker program where essentially you were brought to work in Canada, particularly women from the West Indies. You're brought to work in Canada, but you couldn't have children. You couldn't have any children because the intention was really to bring you here, have you clean up the houses of white folks, as the song goes, you know, and then go back. So they were frightened of, you know, maybe people from Jamaica and other places would be wanting to bring families with them. So whether people were intending to bring their kids later or not, they were sort of forced into a situation where if they had to work, they had to fudge the number of children they had, you know, or something like that. Whether things were actually fudged or not, I'm not sure was true at the end of the day, but it didn't much matter. So there was a terrible element of racism into saying to people, well, you can come to Canada for a bit, and as long as you go and, you know, clean up the houses of, clean up these houses and look after these kids and maybe look after these elderly people and so on. But you better not have any kids if you're going to do so. Even if you're planning to go back to Jamaica and leave the kids with your your own parents or brothers and sisters or whatever, you know. So I think it's after.
By the way, this is as you speak is still one of the great international scandals. Phil and I know about this from work we've done here. We have this issue of Philippine workers and who. Work around the world, but in the Middle East right now, there's and Lebanon has had several instances of suicides by domestic workers who are treated basically as slaves and locked in closets or burnt or beaten and abused, and the authorities always deny there's anything going on because they're dealing with very wealthy, powerful people. And unfortunately, one of the expressions of resistance is suicide. There's a lot of it.
Well, you can't help thinking of that great old Bob Dylan song, the Ballad of
Hattie Carroll.
Hattie Carroll. You know, I mean, that was about a domestic worker who was beaten to death by the white homeowner, and who
that man sued Bob Dylan, but he never won his case because the judge took one look at him and said, "You're not helping your cause."
but it does have those horrible echoes of extreme racism, and it really was the extraordinary tenacity of people like Charlie and the women he was working with, and frankly, I think. I mean, you think of it, it's a long campaign, I was thinking about this, to sustain, you know, different people, seven different women, you have to sustain them through, and they have to be sustained through just this long, arduous campaign, we're going to go here, we're going to go there,
yes.
Charlie will take every measure, of course, because of his deep love and respect for them and belief in the cause and so on, It did hold together. It held together through you know, 6-hour drive through the snow to Montreal, you know.
Yeah, and all kinds of things. By the way, apropos of that, I'd make a link here that today I was speaking with a steel worker, a former leader of a local, the John Inglis local in Toronto, Mike Hers. And he, out of the blue, he says to me, I remember the Seven Mothers case because Charles brought some of them to the plant when they ended the day's work, there was a crowd gathered, and Charles spoke, and some of the mothers spoke, and the people in that plant signed petitions. So it's not surprising, I guess, and maybe something we want to make sure we mention. The Ontario Federation of Labour has issued a statement in appreciation of Charles Roach.
Well, I was speaking with an old friend of mine who taught me law when I was at Osgoode Law School, and we were, of course, talking about Charlie. And the man had been at the memorial, and he reminded me that Charlie had come up and talked to his law students about the Seven Mothers case, as I understand it.
And I bet he sang.
And I was told he burst into song in the middle, and he had 100 law students who sat there with their mouths wide open and never seen a lawyer come and just start singing. And he just sang a song. That's right.
I've been at that scene several times.
Yeah. So the
terrible part, apropos of Charles, is when he then would turn to you and say, now Phil's going to sing something.
That's happened to all of us. I think
We have Peter Rosenthal here who recently, I watched him trump Charles. So Charles is famous for this, saying, well, now it's your turn to entertain. So Peter said, well, you know, I've been preparing, going to get dance instructions and training and training. But my instructor says I'm not ready yet. I think he must have stolen that from somebody. That's a good story.
Well, you know,
I created that rather than dancing or singing.
He said, we used to say, Charles, could I give blood, maybe?
But we should talk about some of the other things that Charlie did, too. I mean, the Seven Mothers case was a fantastic case, but there were many other fantastic things that Charlie did, including fighting against police racism at a time when people didn't accept the notion that police could be racist.
Well, in fact, the number seven comes up again because there was a period in the 1970s where there were seven fatal shootings by Toronto police of black men. Mm-hmm. And because with each one, the anger grew greater and greater, and then it really exploded. And Charlie was at the head of that.
Yeah, Charlie and Dudley Law.
Yes.
Charlie and Dudley Law has organized the black community and many other people of goodwill over a period of many years, and one of their main demands was that police officers should not be investigating themselves when there is a killing by a police officer. And they finally won that in 1990. The Police Services Act was changed to create the Special Investigations Unit, which is an independent unit that investigates those killings. Now, Charlie was very critical of that unit over the years afterward, too, but on the other hand, achieving that independent investigation of police officers was something that was extremely important and positive, and it wouldn't have happened without Charlie Roach and Dudley Laws.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, Peter makes a great point. I mean, that point is made in a quotation in one of the obituaries which I was reading by John Sewell, who was the mayor of Toronto during some of these struggles, and he had his own fights with the police. But he does credit Charlie with the creation of that SIU.
And by the way, let's always remember those families who had the courage to stand up. That is to me the central struggles that he was involved in terms of having the test of all of his talents and all of his courage, because to challenge the police on such a matter when they tell you no, you cannot say this. We all understand has implications, you know, that and particularly poor families when they know they're going to come in for extra attention. And to watch Dudley and Charles be able to hold themselves together and to provide leadership. By the way, within communities which don't know where to turn. I mean, you're dealing with people who have been violated and they're not sure, you know, they don't think anyone respects them. And you want to make some progress, you have to be very able in the way you do it. By the way, on this point about the SIU, that was a great victory. And it remains one, primarily in my view, because it's a political victory. You made the point. That is, you're right. They'll find a way to get around it, but to get the SIU, you actually won a major point, so that you can advance further. You know, depends, but you. That effort was, I would say, yes, that's central to the identity of Charles Roach. And to remind our listeners, this is we're on the line. We have David Jacobs. We earlier were speaking to Julia Farquharson. We have Peter Rosenthal, lawyer. He's the lawyer's lawyer. He was representing the lawyer, Charles Roach, in a battle, which we're going to discuss a little later on. I think we'll talk about this matter of his refusal to swear an oath. As a French guy, as a guy in the Cajun in Louisiana says, I won't swear, what is it? I won't swear to her, I'll only swear at her. I forget. Anyhow. This is a Taylor Report. It's CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. And you can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM, and you can check us out, Taylor-Report.com. This program will be available there. If you guys will all be patient, I think Phil Connor wants to make an announcement before we're because I'm going to lose sight of that.
Yes, this coming Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the October 12th, 13th, and 14th, is the Poetry of Resistance. This is an annual event.
I think it's more than that, isn't it?
Well, it's no once a year.
Don't they do it every Sunday?
It sounds like it, but this is a. This will be at multiple venues on this coming weekend, so I would urge our listeners to go to www.poetryofresistance.org and look at some of the venues. It goes on all day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at many addresses, Betzatoon, Q Space, Bloor Street United Church, and others. And also on November 1st, this is for the future, Why Unions Matter. This is going to be a major event at Steelworkers Hall. At 25 Cecil Street, Thursday, November 1st at 7 p.m.
Yeah. And one other thing. And by the way, David, you would be very interested. Eve Engler has a new book called The Ugly Canadians, Stephen Harper's Foreign Policy. He's going to be at Betzatoon on October 24th at 7 p.m., I believe. David, I think we're going to go. Did you have some other thoughts, matters to do with Charles before we go?
Oh, well, I mean, I think you could talk endlessly about Charles and all the struggles he was in. I mean, he was, a Renaissance man, I guess. I mean, he's a poet, an artist. When I was called to the bar, he gave me as a gift a beautiful painting that he'd done. And used, my recollection is he'd used some sort of computer technology, which I never understood. That was quite a long time ago. To create a lovely painting which hangs in my office, so I now cherish it more than I did before. But
he's a great artist, actually. That office, one of the great pleasures of going to Charles Roach's office is you're always in a gallery. And then you look around and you realize, hey, this the guy in the big office over there did all these. He didn't just buy those. He actually produced them.
I think Charles is a great... a progressive man, a great lawyer, and he really embodied, this sounds kind of trite, but he embodied all the values of the profession, the profession may honor in the breach, such as fearlessly advocating for your clients, and there's nothing Charlie was if not fearless, and again, as Julia Farquharson said, he would go to the ends of the earth for his clients, and people knew if you were in real trouble, no other lawyer wanted to take your case, but you had a case. Mm-hmm. Charles is the man who would fight it for you through to the end. So we're missing a great man.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much, David. And we're going to be talking with Miguel Senti shortly about the book of poems. He's going to make your point as well, I think, about Charles the artist. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Bye-bye. David Jacobs. And... Peter, I think you're actually coaching me here. What is the point we're going to talk about?
Okay. First, could I mention people who want to hear Charlie singing?
As soon
singing,
as you ask, we'll decide after you. Yes, go ahead.
People who want to hear Charlie singing still can hear Charlie singing if you go to YouTube. And go to YouTube and write in Charles Roach, and you'll get him singing several rapsos, as he called them. It's some combination of rap and calypso. And in particular, if you want to see my favorite or one of Charlie's favorites, put into YouTube Charles Roach Bigotry, and you'll get his rapso about bigotry and inclusion. Now, another matter that I was suggesting to Phil that we might discuss was Charlie being brought up before the Law Society in 1979, as Julia referred to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we will do that, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll start with that, and we'll get Miguel on the line, and he'll just jump in with this.
Donate to CIUT 89.5 FM before October 15th and be entered into the early bird draw for a Sony Center for the Performing Arts prize pack, which includes a pair of tickets to six different shows. For more information, visit CIUT.FM. CIUT 89.5 FM. Your voice, your sound, your radio.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Back. We are back. The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. Check us out, Taylor-Report.com. We are, of course, discussing great Charles Roach, who died October the 2nd. We interviewed Charles several times in recent months because he was known to be unwell, and we really wanted to share his voice and his thoughts with everyone. And we're going to continue to be talking about his work. But now, Peter, you were on a theme here.
Well, I was going to tell about another aspect of Charlie, another incident. In 1979, Charlie and his then partner, Mike Smith, were brought in front of the Law Society of Upper Canada. That's the body that all lawyers have to be members of to practice in this province. And that's a body that can discipline lawyers. And they threatened to discipline them. What they had done was, there was a black man in Windsor who had killed someone under difficult circumstances, and they went by the jail just to make sure the guy's human rights were being respected and make sure he was okay. The way the Law Society treated it was as if they had been touting, as they called it, which would mean trying to get clients by just going to jails and trying to steal clients from other lawyers and so on, when all they were concerned with was the person's human rights, and anybody who knew Charlie and Mike would know that would be the case.
Yeah, Charles was a leader, people forget, of an organization. And right. and there was concern because of the circumstances of that case.
Well, and his visit to that jail was that the organization had sent him to the jail to talk to them and said, you know, we want to look into this thing. There was a real atmosphere of hysteria in Windsor. It's kind of a small city, and he had killed a prominent man, right?
Yeah, and Charles, a very prominent man. And by the way, Charles was, of course, understood all the protocols of lawyering and had the utmost, by the way, for all the radicalness, he had the utmost respect for his peers. There's no way in the world Charles was ever going to violate anybody else's status. By the way, full disclosure, I've worked for Charles as an investigator for years, and I've been involved in issues where lawyers were talking about who has this client or that, and there was never a problem with Charles Roach because he was the one who would make sure that the rules were followed. By the way, I want to know, just say, Miguel Samaceni has joined our conversation. You there, Miguel?
Oh, yes, Phil.
So,
good afternoon, everyone.
Yeah. We're here with Peter Rosenthal, who, as you know, was representing Charles in this most recent, the case that Charles really wanted to win at, near the end of his life. He wanted to get it established that you could be a Canadian citizen without swearing an oath, be made a Canadian citizen without swearing an oath to the Queen, or to the royal family, I should say. But, Miguel, I better make sure I ask you, because I think our listeners, too, want to know about this. You are publishing a book by Charles Roach, a book of poems, and it's going to include some of his artwork. Am I right?
Yes. Before Charles died, I discussed with him the publication of this book, and it's going to be a book of his poetry, his most recent one. It's called Rhapsoprosody. And it's going to be, should be out by the end of this month, this October.
Wow.
So,
good.
Yeah, we expect it to be out at the end of the month. And it's a great collection of poetry. Of course, it just was a reflection of his life and all the struggles that he had been involved in, and some of the most powerful words.
Yeah.
In he actually, and we, along with that, we did a bookmark that we had prepared for the as a memento at his service. So that will also be available. It's a bookmark with one of his poems on it.
Mm-hmm.
Called Celebrate Life and Living.
Now, this is Miguel Sanicendi of a different book list, which is, it's 946 Bathurst, right?
Yes. It's 746 Bathurst Street.
I pride myself on my memory. 746 Bathurst.
746 Bathurst Street.
Bathurst
Bloor. And just south of Bloor.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I guess I should mention that naturally, the book will be available at the bookstore, but I would like your listeners to pre-order the book if they can, because that will certainly, we're producing a certain number, and just to make sure that that you get your copy, mm-hmm. and it would be a good idea to mm-hmm. telephone us 416-538-0889 or email us at info@adifferentbooklist.com and let us know that you want us to reserve a copy or copies for you, because it's certainly a book that should be given as gifts and so on to people, so that Charles' legacy will be
well, people
available to a wide range of people.
Yes, people have, many people watched him and listened to him with pleasure when he recited his poems, and so now there's a chance to get a copy of those poems. Hey, Miguel, would you give us that phone number again where people can call to get pre-order the book?
Yes, it's 416-538-0889, and the email is info@adifferentbooklist.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I should mention, too, the book will be very reasonably priced. It would be expected to be between $10 and $15, so it's quite affordable.
That's very good.
I hope people will order.
And it will have some of his artwork. It'll have one of his paintings on the cover.
Definitely the cover of the book will be a replica of one of his art pieces. And also, there will be a couple of others in within the pages of the book. So it will be very, very, very reflected of all his both his paintings and his poetry.
Yeah. Well, great. I congratulate a different book list, 746 Bathurst, for doing this. And Miguel, thanks very much for being with us.
Yes, you. And thank you for having this reflection on Charles. He was just a great Canadian.
Absolutely.
Fighting to the end.
Yes, whether the Queen knows it or not.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Miguel, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Now, in the time remaining, we have Peter Rosenthal here. Phil Conlon is looking at the mic like he's going to talk to it. So,
I want to say that 30 years ago, there was these extraordinary events in Ireland where the political prisoners in
Bobby Sands,
of course, who's now almost a mythical figure, but who was a real flesh and blood human being, and went on a hunger strike against the British occupation in Northern Ireland. Charlie was front and center out in support of the Irish community, of which he was part, by the way. Charlie always made it very clear that part of his interesting and colorful heritage in Trinidad and Tobago included Irish forebears.
There's an American expression which I've never quite understood, but which has been turned into a joke. People say, "I'm black Irish."
In Charlie's case, it's true.
Ishmael Reed, the poet, is also Irish.
But I want to say at that time we had a very sustained campaign that went on for a period greater than a year while this crisis was being fought out in Northern Ireland, and feelings in this town were very, very hot. There was a lot of people in this town who were very pro-British and who certainly didn't like seeing all these Irish people marching around with flags and banners and stuff like that. And Charlie was always there with us.
One of the most prominent black Canadians and a man with international reputation. And there he was calling on Thatcher to save the life of Bobby Sands. Mm. Bobby Sands was a martyr, and it is very memorable. And once again, Charles is very much at home. Like, there's a proverb, the fire born are at home in the fire, and he was comfortable in struggle. I want to bring Peter Rosenthal back in this because, you know, the big case that we were all hearing and is being mentioned in his obituary is that he did not wish to have to swear an oath to the crown in order to become a citizen. What happens now, and what are the details of that case?
Well, more than not wish to, he, as a matter of absolute principle, would not swear allegiance to the Queen, even though at one point it looked like it was going to cost him the right to practice law. Years ago, the Law Society informed him, if you don't become a citizen within a year, you're going to be disbarred. And he decided he would still not become a citizen if he had to swear that oath. Luckily for him, there was a legal case started by a man named Andrews in British Columbia arguing that you don't have to be a citizen to be a lawyer, and that went to the Supreme Court, and they ruled in favor of him just before Charlie would have been disbarred. But that shows you how important his integrity was to him. A lot of people said to him, why don't you just mutter the oath? What's the big deal? To him, it was a big deal. You don't swear an oath unless you mean to keep it. And he knew he was going to fight against monarchy for his whole life because he regarded that as a symbol of fantastic inequality. Mm-hmm. So he devoted a very large amount of time to that fight. In the early 1990s, he started a case in the federal court, and he lost, arguing that it was unconstitutional to require an oath to another being. He lost in the federal court, he lost in the federal court of appeal, and he did not get leave to the Supreme Court of Canada. Seems like that would end it. Not for Charlie. Some years later, he decided to try it again, this time in the Ontario courts, and this time as a class action, he made it, to try and make it different. And that went through the courts in various stages, various arguments. Ultimately, it was ruled that he could not maintain it as a class action, but he could maintain an application for a declaration that that oath was unconstitutional. And Charlie was at the court but was too weak to argue it when it was ruled that we could go ahead with that action. There are now three lawyers on it, me and Mike Smith and Selwyn Peters. And there are several applicants. Now, I'm going to try to explore the possibility that Charlie's name stays on the case, even though he's not with us anymore. Normally, that wouldn't be allowed. But in any case, the case will definitely go ahead. And one of the last things I communicated to Charlie just a couple days before he died, a day before he died, was that we now have a date for the hearing of that case, for the actual hearing on the merits, finally. He never got that before, and we now have it, and it's July 12, 2013. I didn't tell Charlie the date, though. I told him, we have a date for the application, but I couldn't bear to mention the date because it was clear he would not be around anywhere near that long. He knew it, and I knew it. So I just told him we have a date, and he was happy that we had that date.
Yeah. Well, you do. And Charles understood, I should put it that way. They're not going to get away with this. The people who love Charles Roach are going to remind those who put this obstacle there. And his name's going to be associated with this cause. This is a cause many Canadians share. And actually, we have to thank the Prime Minister for deciding to remind us all how royal we are, and which is becoming a royal pain. reaching a stage where, you know, they say, well, then we're going to share embassies with our good friends, our first cousins, and the British. And a lot of people said, well, wait a minute. No, whoa. We're going to share embassies.
You know, by the way, that's not playing too well in Quebec. So Quebecers are saying, oh, I'm supposed to walk into a British embassy now, speak French to them, and expect service because I'm a Canadian. That's a real issue.
No, yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, because this is a very special country, and people better start fighting to clarify all these issues. But they are. This is very much it's as though they're being prodded into this test. Because, of course, now with Charles, and many of those who joined Charles, you raised the issue of the Irish. There were Irish
Irish litigants in that action.
Yes, litigants here. who, and this is a story of Canadian history. That argument has been going on here from the beginning of the upper and lower, et cetera. And it's been, of course, with the big battle over multiculturalism, when it was argued about who should come, they argued about stock, which is what leads us to cases like the Seven Moms, because they came from Jamaica, and that wasn't quite what everybody had in mind, the white rulers. But then you had many people coming from India and Pakistan and elsewhere, and we got into this argument, well, who are we? But, of course, these are folks who are under the British system, and they all said, well, we made up our minds about whether we are, you know, going to follow the swear allegiance to the Queen or to the royal family. So the most powerful circles in Canada are in a kind of a dilemma, because actually the population is in a mood to have, you know, self-rule and to not have a foreign monarch. And I think Charlie knew that his intuition was right.
You know, Charlie's ability to unite diverse people in a cause is second to none. And you should look at the litigants in this case about swearing the oath as a wonderful example. I mean, there are people coming to that issue from so many different directions. For instance, there are people who have religious objections to swearing oaths who are part of the litigants. And there are people who just specifically object to monarchy because they believe in republican forms of government. And then, of course, you have a core group, including Irish people and West Indians and some Africans, I think, who say, this queen, we should swear oath to this queen who is descended from the people who enslaved our ancestors or were oppressed our ancestors. Mm-hmm. But Charlie has his genius to bring very, very diverse people together into a common cause, and he's done it in this case.
That's true. People should understand from a legal point of view, we are a constitutional monarchy by virtue of our constitution. We can't get the court to change that, unfortunately, in my view and Charlie's. But the requirement of swearing allegiance to the Queen to become a citizen, that's just part of the Citizenship Act. That's not part of the constitution, as Charlie pointed out to us. And that can be changed by the courts. And we hope that the court realizes, as Charlie argued, that that violates equality rights, because people who are not born in Canada have to take that oath. Canadians don't ever have to swear an oath of allegiance to the Queen. They can be Republicans as much as they want to. Mm-hmm. And it also violates freedom of conscience for somebody who, like Charles Roach, finds it unbearable to swear allegiance to that symbol of inequality, Her Majesty.
Yeah. Very well stated. That's Peter Rosenthal, who is the lawyer for the lawyer, Charles Roach. We've been memorializing Charles. We're going to be talking about Charles in the future on this program. And I'll just remind our listeners, this is the Taylor Report, and next week CIUT begins its fundraising, and I know you're going to line up to help out, because everybody likes to donate to this great FM stadium. We play football at the stadium here, station, which is very special, and I think we can now say we're the only one. So we'll be fundraising next Monday. We want you to call and help us out and talk to us and make a contribution to CIUT. So we'll be asking you that next week. Phil Conlon, thanks very much. Carol, again, thank you. And this is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report, and we'll see you next week.